Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
Is there a threshold that APS has in place for disconnection? I know other utilities have a $300 threshold. Is there a threshold in place at APS? And if so, what is that threshold? If it's higher than the amount that Ms. Pullman owed, then why was her power cut off?
What steps is CBP taking to improve the response and ability to respond in a timely fashion?
I think there's definitely an area where we can improve the flow. There's an old saying, justice delayed is justice denied.
As a lawyer and the state's chief legal officer, we're going to do everything we can to ensure those who helped create this crisis are held financially accountable.
I sit on the Arizona Commerce Authority. We're leading the nation in terms of job creation and people coming to the state. I'm going to continue to follow that same policy and protocol as we continue to lead the country in job creation. These are subjective decisions, and I've made my decisions.
And with us to talk about Governor Ducey and tax incentives, along with APS and the Corporation Commission and more, are Lorna Romero of the Arizona Chamber Foundation and former Tempe Mayor Neil Giuliano, who is president and CEO of Greater Phoenix Leadership. Guys, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Good morning.
All right, Lorna, we're going to start off with Senator Sylvia Allen, and she made some comments which reminded some people of what David Stringer had to say. The governor did not agree. The fact that she said these things, does that start another sort of tempest in a teapot?
Well, I mean, she made the comments, and then she quickly put out a statement thereafter when it became public, trying to explain what she was trying to say. The issue that's come up this week is this comparison to David Stringer, which I think we can all agree they're two different human beings, and the story behind David Stringer is a very loaded story. He had a history of making very racist comments, inappropriate behavior that he never apologized for. And so to make this unfair comparison between him and Sylvia Allen, I just think it's just a bigger I think it just goes to show what we've been seeing locally and nationally about these unfair comparisons when someone makes a comment that somebody disagrees with. So I think it's unfair to make that comparison.
Neil, is it troublesome, though, that Sylvia Allen would say things that it wouldn't be that big a stretch to call them at least racially tinged, if not racist?
Yes, but the senator, the state senator from up there in northern Arizona, has survived the earth being only 3,000 years old and other things. So I really don't think it's going to matter much to the constituency up there. She's in a three-way primary, at least from the talk going on right now. She could be facing a three-way primary for a re-election coming up a year from now.
There's been a lot of talk about the response to these comments, especially and obviously, Lorna, you're right. The Stringer situation was there was a lot more to it, a lot more of a history and a lot of other stuff. But when he made just the comments themselves, there was a very fast response from both Democrats and Republicans saying this is not OK. With Senator Allen, it was really just Democrats saying this is not OK. Do we make too much of how people respond to these kinds of things? Do we maybe expect too much of people to respond to everything that one of their colleagues might say?
Oh, I think you raise a great point. I think we've come into this era where there's this expectation that any comment that any elected official makes, any elected official of any level of any party has to respond to it. I mean, this is how it's been since 2016 with the president and certain tweets. Now you expect every Republican or every Democrat to have a comment on it. I mean, if that's the way that we're going to operate, then who's going to be have time for their day job? And so I think there is this unrealistic expectation that you respond to everything. But back to the David Stringer thing, it's too completely, it's apples and oranges. And so I think it's really unfair for the commentary this week to be comparing it. And, you know, the comments that the governor made, he was speaking to the character and the person that he knows of Sylvia Allen, which was different than David Stringer. But I do agree, this unrealistic expectation that Neil and I and you guys and every other elected official needs to respond to every comment anyone makes, that's exhausting. And we need to focus on other issues.
That said, though, if you are the governor and the leader of your party in the state, do you have an obligation, at least that one individual, to say something, to say, even if it's, hey, I know Sylvia Allen, I know she didn't really mean that, I wish she hadn't said what she said, or yes, it sounded bad.
Go ahead.
My short answer there is no, you don't. And I can imagine when I was mayor and people would come up with council members, so-and-so said this at a neighborhood meeting, and I said, thank you. You don't have to comment on everything. You don't have to have an opinion on every legislator and what they say and when they say it and so forth. Your job as the person sitting at the end of the table is to provide that general direction and order to things. And you have to mirror the behavior that you want in a whole lot of other people. And so my answer is no, the governor doesn't have to have a comment on every single thing that everybody in his party or any other party says or does.
What strikes me, though, is going back to what Lorna said, the fact that it seems ridiculous people should have to respond to what everyone says. But then with Mark talking about Governor Ducey at the same time, it almost feels like we're sort of caught between you either respond to everything or if you don't respond, you're going to get questions about that. So I guess I'm wondering at what point does it seem like it is something to respond to? Because I understand as mayor, you're going to get that sort of thing too. What is there a line, is there a level that reaches it for you?
There is a line. And I think inherently as the elected official, constantly in the work of governing and interacting with all these other people on all these other issues, you know when it's appropriate and when it's not appropriate. And I think you have to be able to understand that the person who's being asked may or may not really want to comment on that, and that's going to be just the way it is.
Yeah.
Lorna, do you think this issue goes away quickly for Senator Allen?
We are now in, what, August of 2019, right? I forget what day of the week it is now. Voters have short memories. We've talked about this numerous times on the show when we were speculating, is this going to be a top issue in 2020? And who knows what's going to happen a month from now? And so I can't speak to that. Will her challengers probably bring it up in her election? I'm sure they will. How much of an impact it has, I can't speak to that right now.
But even before Election Day, though, do you anticipate this having any kind of impact when the legislature comes back in January?
I don't believe so. She put out her statement. I think by the time they roll in January, this won't be a topic of conversation anymore.
Neil, you're shaking your head.
I would agree with that. I mean, and again, it's, you know, this is Senator Allen has not been immune to making other kinds of comments that people have had to offer their opinion about. And I think this is just going to be another one on that list.
Yeah, it was just a missed opportunity for The Daily Show. I guess I'm wondering on this one.
Perhaps. Perhaps. Maybe the writers are on vacation, too.
Exactly. Neil, let's go to what the governor had to say about incentives. And this relates specifically to Goodyear and Nike. As someone, again, as Tempe mayor, there's this economic development battle between how much, what sort of incentives should be offered. And then in this case, the governor with the Commerce Authority, there's so much there. But at this point, do incentives come with sort of a black mark against them in some way, almost like the term lobbyist?
I hope not, because the use of incentives at different levels, at different times when appropriate, and especially incentives that are performance-based for the organization that is receiving those incentives, can be a very valuable tool in a very competitive economic development market. Arizona versus Colorado, New Mexico, California, and so forth. So I hope the answer to that is no. And I think it probably is no, because while we get caught up in the swirl of all this talk and so forth, the reality is, and the great news is, Nike's coming to Arizona. They're bringing those jobs. We need those jobs. They are a world-known brand of high value that will be terrific for Arizona.
Lorna?
No, and I completely agree. And I think what typically gets lost when we have this conversation about incentives, good, bad, et cetera. I mean, this is not a new topic of conversation. But we don't live in a world where everyone's operating on the same level playing field. We're competing with other states to attract businesses here. And so those people who don't like incentives have never liked them. And so this situation isn't going to sway either way. But I do think I agree with Neil. What really should be celebrated is the fact that big names like Nike and Microsoft and these huge companies are coming to Arizona, which a decade ago, we weren't even on their radar.
Let me ask you about just the phrase open for business, which Governor Ducey and others like to use. Is this one of those things where are we just begging, we want 100% consistency on things so the governor can in some ways contradict himself when it comes to Nike, and yet once Nike decides they're actually coming, hey, we're glad to have them. Are we having expectations that are too great in from whether it's incentives or the politics of it? Because that's what sort of struck me about this, that the governor I think probably was justifiably what's up with these 2 a.m. tweets and people were noticing that. But then in the bigger picture, yeah, he ultimately wanted this company to be here.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think you can have it both ways. You can be upset with a decision that a company makes and express your opinion about it. And at the same time, be happy that they're going to come to one of your communities and, you know, create, you know, a huge project and create jobs. And so to make it seem as though he can't express his opinion about a decision that they make, he can still celebrate the fact that they're coming. So I think you can have it both ways.
And I think there's a larger issue and a broader issue. He should express his opinion whatever way he wants. He's the governor. What I worry about with these kinds of situations is, so what happens when a good number of companies decide they're not going to Georgia anymore because the full range of women's health care is not available in the state of Georgia? So we're not going there with our employees. And someone else says, well, we're not going to Massachusetts because they have these policies. And someone else says, well, we're not going to the... That is not good for society, I don't think. So, of course, employers are going to have strong opinions about a lot of issues. Their employees want to go to work, want to do their job, want to earn a living for their family. I believe most employees do not want to get caught up in the politics of what their organizations are standing for in a political world, in a political spectrum. And so I think we have to be careful about how we talk about all of this as it moves forward, because I am fearful that we're going to see more and more decisions made based upon the politics of a particular area. And I just think that's not good in the long run.
Well, I wonder if we saw kind of the inverse of that when Governor Ducey said that he wanted the Commerce Authority to pull back the incentive. It wasn't about the company's business practices or about how they treat their workers. It was about a decision that he disagreed with. So do you sort of see that as the same kind of danger that you were just talking
about?
Well,
there's going to so my fear is those kinds of small little political volleys, which is really all they are. Look, that's all that was. And it's fine. But if those intensify and those grow larger and those have more and more influence in the business ecosystem, I just think that's bad for business.
And I would say, you know, when it comes to the Arizona Competes Fund and the Arizona Commerce Authority, I mean, there's a whole process that's involved in that. And so, but it's a purely subjective process. You know, if they're going to make the determination to, you know, offer Nike or whatever company that they're trying to lure a certain incentive to come, that's a decision made by the Arizona Commerce Authority. And it's not like there's a specific rubric or some kind of, you know, formula with it. That's the decision that they make. And so, you know, that's how the governor felt at that point, that he didn't want to offer Nike the incentive and made that request to the Commerce Authority. And that was the decision that was made.
Should it be that subjective, though? I mean, should it be... Since we're talking about taxpayer dollars, should it be a little bit more clear, I guess, to taxpayers and to voters where this money is going and how it's being spent?
And that's the nature of the fund. I mean, and that's how it operates in other states, too, because every company is different. And what the packages of incentives, whether that's in partnership with a local municipality or a county or however you're trying to craft the package, it's going to be different per company. And so it's really hard to make it just a purely formulaic process because it's going to vary.
Well, I can only speak at a city level, obviously. But when an organization would be coming forward to the city of Tempe for a particular incentive one way or another, there's a literal checklist. How many jobs will it be? What's the wages of those jobs? What will be the workforce development program that we will provide, perhaps in combination with a community college? All of these things are itemized. Nowhere on that list is what do they think about this social issue or whatever, right? And I hope we don't get to where what do they think about this social issue or whatever ends up on that list, because I think that just in the long run is just not good for society.
That's Neil Giuliano. Also here is Lorna Romero with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix. We're in the midst of the Friday newscap, which continues after this. It's the Friday newscap on KJZZ with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein. Our panelists today, Lorna Romero of the Arizona Chamber Foundation and former Tempe Mayor Neil Giuliano, currently president and CEO of Greater Phoenix Leadership. Lorna, let me ask you about an op-ed that Cindy McCain penned for The Republic a few days ago. Of course, you used to work for Senator McCain. Interesting to a lot of people in that it was a defense, in essence, of her friend, APS CEO Don Brandt, which in some cases people could say, okay, that's fine. They're friends. Other people would say the timing of this is strange because APS is sort of going through the ringer in a lot of different ways about their policies. What did you make of the timing of it, the content?
I didn't think the timing was questionable at all. I think it made the most sense to have the most impact given that her close personal family friend was being attacked and his character was being attacked. And so I think for those who are questioning the timing or why she did it, it's as simple as they're close personal friends and she wanted to take the opportunity to speak about the man that she knows personally and speak of his character during a time when he is just being pulled through the mud for other political reasons.
For policies, though, that people were deeming to be sort of out of step that may have led to the deaths of a couple of people, whether he deserves direct blame for that or not, a lot of people think he deserves some kind of criticism.
Well, I mean, if you want to criticize policies of APS, that's one thing. To attack someone's character is something different. And I think that was what Cindy McCain was trying to communicate, is if you want to have this conversation about whether or not, you know, electric companies should be doing certain policies is one thing, but to attack the person is completely different. So she wanted to be able to provide that other insight.
Neil, just theoretically, I was thinking about the, you know, I'm going to use the phrase political capital on this. And obviously, Cindy McCain, beloved, respected for her own work, for the work that Senator McCain did. A lot of people were saying this just seems like interesting timing, not just because of that, but even this is where that she would step into the arena with this and Don Brandt being under as much pressure. Is it simply about friendship, like Lorna said?
My guess is, and I'll have to apologize, I didn't see the editorial, so I didn't read it. But I think that what it is, and I think the other thing people need to remember is most folks who have that kind of a good personal friendship with someone who is high profile or perceived to be powerful, the high profile and powerful part is not the lens of that relationship, right? People might see it that way, but when they don't see it that way. And so I don't think there was a political calculation. I think this was a friend writing on behalf of another friend.
Lorna, you mentioned on the incentives issue that people who don't like them will still not like them. People who do like them will still like them. Is this the same kind of situation? People who think Don Brandt is okay and has been unfairly treated will still think that after this, and people who think the opposite will still feel that way?
Yeah, you know, and here's – I don't know how much of this is just in the bubble of those of us who are just consuming this. And if you're going to talk to the average person, how much they would even know about what's being written about APS, Don Brandt, et cetera. But I don't – I think those who are closely watching this – I think what she was able to provide was just a different perspective that I think we can mostly all agree that has not been reported necessarily in the state, to provide a different perspective about him as a person and what he's done for the community. And so will that sway certain opinions? Maybe for some people. For those who are openly being hostile and attacking, probably not. But I don't see any issue with her expressing her personal opinion about it and her personal friendship and getting that message out there because it's needed.
I think one other thing I wanted to ask about APS is that now we know that Don Brandt has agreed to testify before the Corporation Commission about some of their policies. And Lorna, what do you think about that? Is that significant at this point, considering everything that's been going on? Corporation Commission has a list of questions they want to ask. Does it look better that he's coming in? I guess I'm weighing the positivity of him coming in or the negativity of him not. How big a difference could this make in terms of perception at the very least?
I think it's very positive. The fact that he's going to go and speak for the Corporation Commission and give information and answer their questions, I think is a positive. Anytime that you have the CEO of a company, whether it's before the Corporation Commission or the legislature or testifying before Congress, speak about the internal policies of their company, I think it's great. And so I don't really see much of a downside to it. I think it's good for Mr. Brandt.
I wonder if this in some ways maybe becomes like a nomination hearing before the Senate Judiciary Committee for a Supreme Court justice, though, where the elected officials are the ones, you know, sort of making maybe more statements than asking questions. I mean, do you expect to learn something from this? Do you see this hearing as more than sort of a show?
I think it's important. And I think, look, you know, for my full disclosure, Don was the chair of the GPL board for the last couple of years and did a great job working with me and everyone else on a lot of issues that, quite frankly, are never going to be in the newspaper or never going to be reported on, but that have significantly advanced a good place for our state. So having said that, he understands leadership, and I think he understands that he is the boss. He is the CEO. And so if at some point it's important for him to step forward and answer questions and so forth, I don't think he's afraid of doing that. I think he's now said he's going to do that. So I think it's all a good thing.
Neil, let's wrap up with our last few minutes. Elizabeth Warren was in Tempe last night. Not the Phoenix area.
Yeah, she was in the Phoenix area event.
She was actually in Tempe. So what does Elizabeth Warren bring to the table that Arizona voters might eventually go for? The discussion is that obviously very, very rarely does a Democrat win Arizona when it comes to the presidential race. Does she bring something that would attract a certain amount of popularity that could go beyond mediocre?
Well, I think the senator's presence in Arizona at this stage of the very early part of the Democratic nomination process is to build a ground troop and to build some forces and to energize a bunch of people to become involved in her campaign on a very grassroots level, because that's, you know, she's going to need that for the primary when it comes here. Lorna thinks about this. I don't think it was to raise a lot of money, because I don't even know if she did a fundraiser event while she was here. I know she did the public event, but I don't think there's a lot of money to be had at this point in the far left progressive wing of the Arizona Democrats. There may be for the eventual nominee. But look, I'm thrilled that she came here, and she actually was in Tempe for the Phoenix area event, just for the record, and it was great. I was happy to see the news coverage of it.
Yeah, I think it's great that she came to Arizona. I encourage all presidential candidates to do it in every election cycle for them to come to Arizona early. We have a tendency to be forgotten about or assumptions made about the state. And so I think it's great for them to come early on and interact with voters. How much people are paying attention to the 2020 cycle right now? Neil and I were talking about this. Probably very few.
Right.
But good for her for coming and trying to, you know, rally a troop here.
And I think we're a cycle away. The sites are already chosen for 2020 for one of the big presidential debates, like we hosted at Gamage at ASU in 2004. But I think Arizona should be prime for the next cycle when it comes about in 2024.
Do you think the fact that she was here, does that give you an indication that Arizona might actually be competitive in the primary or in the general election?
Well, most of these early stops are relationship-based. So someone involved with the senator's campaign probably knows someone at a level in Arizona who was able to say, you know, they don't go anywhere by accident, right? So it was some sort of a relationship that brought her here, and then they put it all together, and then they figure, okay, well, let's make sure we hit the zip codes and sign up volunteers and all these other sorts of things. So I think it's, like I said earlier, I think it's fantastic. I hope more of them come.
But finally on this, so what are the chances that Elizabeth Warren or someone from the progressive wing of the Democratic Party could win Arizona? Lauren, I'll ask you first.
Thank you.
Wow, here we go.
You said specifically Elizabeth Warren or someone from the progressive wing of the Democrat Party, very slim of winning Arizona. If the Democrats were to nominate Elizabeth Warren or someone else of her ideology, there's no way they're going to win the presidential in Arizona.
Neil, briefly on that?
Well, you know, the one thing I know is that there's no one answer on something like that. And I think we don't know that, because we don't know what this sitting president will do a week or 2 weeks before the election. And who knows what that, we just don't know. I would not rule out any of the potential contenders against this president, because I think there's too much unknown, too much volatility, and it's just impossible to say.
But the question was progressives.
Yes.
And so
I even think
so look. I will stick with my bold prediction. I will stick with it.
Well, you know, this continuum of progressive we'd have to spend a whole other show just talking about that.
We'll plan on that then. Neil Giuliano of Greater Phoenix Leadership, Lauren Romero of the Arizona Chamber Foundation. Guys, thanks as always.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.